foster their own independence, to realize their individuality. Professor McGoey is the author of the 2015 book, No Such Thing as a Free Gift, The Gates Foundation and the Profits of Philanthropy. Pharma had designs on Africa. Bwana Fauci and Bwana Gates donned pith helmets, grasped their machetes, shouldered their weaponized vaccines and toxic antivirals, and made themselves the 21st century versions of the crusading European explorers Burton and Speke, bestowing the blessings of Western civilization upon the dark continent and requiring only obedience in return. They are here to save the world, says McGoey of philanthrocapitalists, as long as the world yields to their interests. Thanks to their powerful collaboration, pharma would emerge as perhaps Africa's cruelest and most deadly colonial overlord. HIV provided Gates and Dr. Fauci a beachhead in Africa for their new brand of medical colonialism, and a vehicle for the partners to build and maintain a powerful global network that came to include heads of state, health ministers, international health regulators, the WHO, the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, and key leaders from the financial industry and the military officials who served as command center of the burgeoning biosecurity apparatus. Their foot soldiers were the army of frontline virologists, vaccinologists, clinicians, and hospital administrators who relied on their largesse and acted as the community-based ideological commissars of this crusade. Philanthrocapitalism's Global Imperium. In August 1941, President Franklin Roosevelt forced Winston Churchill to sign the Atlantic Charter as a condition for U.S. support of the Allied effort in World War II. The Charter, a heartening emblem of American idealism, required the European allies to relinquish their colonies following the war. For two centuries, unimpeded access to the colonized world's rich national resources had been the principal source of European wealth. The Atlantic Charter and nationalist liberation movements in the 1950s and 60s dismantled the traditional colonial model in Africa. The continent, however, quickly reopened to soft colonization by multinational corporations and their state sponsors. During the Cold War, the U.S. military and intelligence agencies largely replaced Europe's colonial armies in those regions, supporting virtually any tin horn dictator who proved his anti-communist bona fides by rolling out red carpets for U.S. multinationals. When the Berlin Wall fell, the United States already had 655 military bases, now 800, across the developing world, and U.S. companies had blank checks in host nations to extract agricultural, mineral, petroleum and lumber resources, and large markets for finished goods, including, notably, pharmaceuticals. After the Soviet bugaboo collapsed, Islamic terrorism and biosecurity supplanted communism as the rationale for a continued U.S. military and corporate presence all over the developing world. Pharma's acquisitive longing for Africa's natural resources and its teeming and compliant populations with their elevated disease burdens helped drive the rise of biosecurity as the spear tip of corporate imperialism. Bill Gates and Dr. Fauci offered biosecurity as the underlying rationale for their medical neocolonialism project. Paraphrasing the military's Cold War dogma, Gates and Dr. Fauci warned that if we didn't stop the germs in Africa, we'd end up fighting them in New York and Los Angeles. They echoed also the hackneyed crusaders' narrative that they were rescuing the continent from famine, pestilence, and ignorance with superior know-how and breakthrough technologies. The combined Gates-Fauci power to rain foreign aid dollars on capital-starved African governments made them modern imperial viceroys on the continent. WHO became their colonial vassal, legitimizing and facilitating their campaigns to open African markets for drug makers to dump unwanted products and to experiment with promising new cures. AIDS vaccines in Africa. In January 2003, as Gates and Dr. Fauci opened dozens of clinical trials for experimental AIDS vaccines across Africa, Dr. Fauci's perennial hagiographer Michael Spector, writing in The New Yorker, raised trenchant questions about the ethical problems associated with long-term vaccine trials in the developing world, funded by Western donors and designed largely by Western scientists. Spector asks, has the race to save Africa from AIDS put Western science at odds with Western ethics? The article quotes African leaders asking why their continent needed to shoulder the burden of testing expensive vaccines and medicines that, if successful, would be primarily used in Western countries. They complained about pharmaceutical companies automatically lowering safety standards for clinical trials when they stepped onto the African continent. Why us? A prominent African journalist asked Spector. It seems it's always us. For how many years does Uganda have to be the test case? I am very worried about these trials, said Peter Lurie, the deputy director of Public Citizens Health Research Group. Lurie and his colleague Sidney Wolfe complained to Spector about the cavalier attitude of American researchers toward third world subjects. Instead of seeing themselves as activists for better care in Africa, scientists will use the poor quality of care to justify what they want to do anyway, Lurie said. But you are not permitted simply to use subjects in order to collect data because it is useful to you. That is exploitation and abuse. That is what Tuskegee was. Lurie was referring to CDC's notorious decision to leave hundreds of black Alabama sharecroppers with untreated syphilis for 40 years beginning in 1932 in order to document the course of the disease. I am proud that my uncle, Senator Edward Kennedy, played a key role in exposing and ending the experiment in 1973. Lurie added, if we aren't careful, we could be in for the greatest injustice in the history of medicine. Later that year, Dr. Fauci's agency announced that NIAID's most recent AIDS vaccine experiment had failed. Please don't say that I am pessimistic, because I am not, Anthony Fauci said in 2003, obliquely conceding that HIV and AIDS were not behaving the way his hypotheses predicted. The best ways to vaccinate don't work with HIV. We need to come up with something new. Gates seemed to think that floods of new money could teach the virus to behave. In July 2006, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced 16 grants totaling $287 million to create an international network of collaborative research consortia focused on accelerating the pace of HIV vaccine development by funding more than 165 PIs to conduct vaccine trials in 19 countries. 2 years later, on July 18, 2008, Dr. Fauci announced the cancellation of the largest human trial to date. It was NIAID's most promising HIV vaccine by far. Dr. Fauci contributed $140 million of taxpayer money to develop the Merck jab, and NIAID had already begun enrolling 8,500 U.S. volunteers. It would be the first trial of an HIV jab on U.S. citizens. Dr. Fauci said he intended the new trial to determine whether the vaccine could significantly lower the amount of HIV in the blood of those who become infected. Of course, Merck and NIAID had already by then tested the vaccine on 3,000 participants in 9 African countries. The latest data were showing that the trial had not gone well. The Times reported coyly that the PAVE trial had been postponed after a test of the Merck vaccine failed in its two main objectives: to prevent infection and to lower the amount of HIV in the blood among those who became infected. Buried near the end of the New York Times article were some key facts. It turned out that the vaccine was not only ineffective, but researchers reported alarming safety signals that caused a safety monitoring committee to halt the study. Furthermore, instead of preventing infection, the Merck NIAID researchers reported data suggesting the vaccine actually raised the risk of contracting HIV. Dr. Fauci said he reached his decision to abort the coming trial after meeting with scientists trying to understand why the Merck vaccine malfunctioned. Dr. Fauci's colleagues could offer no explanation for the vaccine's failure. Lawrence K. Altman of the New York Times reported that Dr. Fauci admitted that after a decade of effort, scientists realized that they did not know enough about how HIV vaccines and the immune system interact. Dr. Fauci told the Times that it was becoming clearer that more fundamental research and animal testing would be needed before an HIV vaccine was ever marketed. These were stunning admissions, which seemed to validate the critiques by Duisberg and others who predicted the inevitable failure of a vaccine based on the defective HIV/AIDS hypothesis. Dr. Fauci said he had concluded that scientists must go a step at a time because they did not yet know fundamental facts like which immune reactions are the most important in preventing the infection. Cornell University scientist Kendall A. Smith made an even broader confession of error. "We really have not understood what actually constitutes a successful vaccine, despite the more than two centuries that have elapsed since Sir Edward Jenner described the first effective vaccine for smallpox virus in 1798. Consequently, all of the vaccines currently in use were developed empirically and only within the past 50 years without a comprehensive understanding as to how the immune system functions." If Fauci's HIV/AIDS hypotheses were true, they should have been able to develop a vaccine, observes Dr. David Rasnick, a PhD biochemist who has worked for 30 years in the pharmaceutical biotech field. Fauci's fundamental conundrum is that he has told everybody to diagnose AIDS based on the presence of HIV antibodies. With every other disease, the presence of antibodies is the signal that the patient has vanquished the disease. With AIDS, Fauci and Gallo, and now Gates, claim it's a sign you're about to die. Think about it. If the objective of an AIDS vaccine is to stimulate antibody production, then success would mean that every vaccinated person would also have an AIDS diagnosis. I mean, this is fodder for a comedy bit. It's like someone gave the Three Stooges an annual billion-dollar budget. On October 8, 2015, Gallo's Institute of Human Virology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine announced the launch of its Phase 1 human trials of Gallo's latest HIV vaccine candidate. A consortium led by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave $23.4 million to Gallo's research on this vaccine. Other money came from Redfield's pals in the U.S. military HIV research program. Gallo launched his clinical trial in collaboration with Profectus Biosciences, a biotech firm that he recently spun off from IHV, to allow him to monetize the research he conducted with tax-deductible funding from Gates and taxpayer dollars from NIH and the military. Gallo had already been testing his new HIV vaccines on animals, and the results in monkeys are interesting, but they're not perfect. Undeterred by the vaccine's disappointing performance in macaques, Gallo was champing at the bit to test his concoction on some higher primates. If we keep just using monkeys, we're never going anywhere. We need for humans to respond. In May 2020, I asked Gallo what had ever happened to this experimental vaccine. Gallo claimed, in what I suspected to be an evasive non-answer, that he was still, after 6 years, testing it for an immune response. By 2015, the BMGF was spending about $400 million a year on AIDS drug research. Gallo told me that his is only one of over 100 groups Gates has funded to find the elusive vaccine. Gates admitted publicly to Agence France-Presse that the quest for an AIDS vaccine has taken longer than expected, with many disappointments along the way. Despite Gates and Fauci's impressive string of failures, Gates remained bullish. A vaccine, that's a big area of funding for our foundation, but even in the best case, that's 5 years away, and perhaps as long as 10, he jauntily predicted during a question and answer session with young people. Probably the top priority is a vaccine. If we had a vaccine that can protect people, we can stop the epidemic. On February 3, 2020, Julie Steenhuisen of Reuters reported that NIAID had suddenly halted its clinical trial of its most promising HIV vaccine to date. NIAID was in the middle of phase 3 trials on more than 5,000 South Africans when they realized that once again, the vaccine was raising the risk of AIDS in vaccinated individuals. Dr. Fauci issued another of his cheerful prognostications. Research continues on other approaches to a safe and effective HIV vaccine, which I still believe can be achieved. Since 1984, undeterred by 37 years of broken promises, failed clinical trials, billions of squandered dollars, and uncounted human carnage, Dr. Fauci and his old crony Bob Gallo continue to ride the AIDS vaccine gravy train. Neither man has advanced the search for a cure, but both have built impressive institutions. Existential questions about their scientific validity still bedeviled the two intertwined disciplines of virology and vaccinology, for which those institutions form key nerve centers. Dr. Fauci's battle against AIDS is a religious crusade rooted in faith and appeals to authority, rather than empiricism or rigorous scientific proof. Following the path of earlier colonial interventions in Africa, Dr. Fauci's evangelical campaign to impose the orthodoxies of germ warfare on Africans is an exercise in raw power, domination, and the ruthless extraction of profit. Virology, a new Janissary Corps. As with the sultans, khans, tsars, monarchs, and emperors of yore, Dr. Fauci's power derives from his capacity to fund, arm, pay, maintain, and effectively deploy a large and sprawling standing army. NIH alone controls an annual $42 billion budget, mainly distributed in over 50,000 grants supporting over 300,000 positions globally in medical research. The thousands of doctors, hospital administrators, health officials, and research virologists whose positions, careers, and salaries depend on AIDS dollars flowing from Dr. Fauci, Mr. Gates, and the Wellcome Trust, Great Britain's version of the Gates Foundation, are the officers and soldiers in a mercenary army that functions to defend all vaccines and Dr. Fauci's HIV/AIDS doxologies. The entire field of virology is Dr. Fauci's Janissary Corps, the elite warriors that he can rapidly muster to each new battlefield to achieve new conquests and ruthlessly suppress rebellion, dissent, and resistance. In 2020, many of the Gates-Fauci HIV vaccine trials in Africa suddenly became COVID-19 vaccine trials. as the unprecedented tsunami of new COVID-19 plunder began flowing through Dr. Fauci to the same disciplined legions of the virology caste. At the outset of the pandemic, Dr. Fauci tapped his trusty procurator, Dr. Larry Corey, to launch the COVID-19 Prevention Network with the purpose of redeploying Dr. Fauci's most reliable and trusted PIs on a blitzkrieg campaign to win lightning vaccine approvals for his preferred jabs. Fauci accomplished this daunting mission by transforming his existing HIV trials practically overnight into Phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trials. Without breaking stride, his PI army pivoted to march in lockstep into the new viral skirmish. Their exquisitely disciplined ranks also supplied the independent experts who populated the FDA and CDC committees that approved those shoddily tested COVID pokes, the doctors and medical ethicists who appeared on TV to run interference for every government-mandated COVID-19 countermeasure, masks, lockdowns, social distancing, and vaccination, including justifying the jab for children and pregnant women. In any rational universe, giving these untested, low-efficacy shots to children and pregnant women would constitute both medical malpractice and child abuse, given the low risk for COVID and higher risk from the vaccine among these cohorts. They penned editorials in the newspapers and articles in the scientific journals validating official orthodoxies and uniformly dismissing dissenters as screwballs, flakes, quacks, and conspiracy theorists. From their ranks, Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates tapped the charlatans and biostitutes who conducted the fraudulent studies that torpedoed hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and won approval for their pet blockbuster drug, remdesivir. When revelations that the COVID-19 virus was likely the product of genetic engineering threatened to discredit his empire, Tony Fauci dispatched the hand-picked elite of virology's officer corps to draft and sign the consequential editorials published in Nature and The Lancet in February and March of 2020, assuring the world that the lab leak hypothesis was a crackpot conspiracy. The monolithic discipline of the virology caste and its capacity to rigorously enforce its omerta effectively silenced debate on COVID-19's origins for a year. The saga of Fauci virologist Christian Anderson, a PI who built his career on serial NIAID grants, offers a stark example of Fauci's system of payoffs. Anderson was the first grantee to alert Tony Fauci in a 10:32 p.m. email on January 31, 2020, to the strong evidence that COVID-19 was lab-generated and that the experiment that created it may bear NIAID's fingerprints. After midnight, Dr. Fauci warned his chief aide to keep his phone on and stand ready for some important work, to arrange a secretive emergency meeting to discuss damage control with 11 of the world's top virologists, including Anderson and 5 key researchers from the Wellcome Trust. Dr. Fauci was the only U.S. government official on this phone call. 4 days later, Anderson, who less than 100 hours earlier was convinced the virus did not come from nature, submitted a letter, secretly edited by Fauci, signed by 5 prominent virologists, all NIAID and Wellcome Trust PIs, ridiculing the suggestion that the circulating coronavirus could possibly have been lab-generated. 1 month later, Dr. Fauci, without disclosing his secretive involvement, cited that very letter at a White House press conference as proof that COVID-19 was naturally evolved. In the months that followed, Anderson's employer, Scripps Research Institute, received an array of substantial grants from NIAID totaling $78 million for the calendar year. The NIAID, by the end of 2020, had granted the employers of four of the five signatories on the paper a total of nearly $155 million. That's how the game gets played. Dr. Fauci's disciples and soldiers understand that, as long as they support Dr. Fauci, they will continue to benefit